Thank you, Mr. Gagani. I think we have a question here from Representative Fletcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you supplying the numbers. It's kind of brought everything down to a reality base, I guess. What capacity factor are you assuming for this particular scenario?
A 40% capacity factor, Representative.
Here's what's tending to hit me. We restructured in the state to put the risk on the generator. Mm-hmm. That was the premise. Rather than put the risk on the user, the consumer, through our guarantee of we'll pay the bill and everything, the risk was supposed to be on the generator, right? What you're essentially asking is the consumer take the risk again. So if I've got that relationship correct, why wouldn't it just be better to go back to a regulated utility? Then we would make the policy decisions in the legislature to say, utility T&D, this is what we want you to do. You work with the PUC. You would be guaranteed your rate of return, so forth, so on. And at least we'd have something at the end of the day besides, I don't know what we did with this, to be honest with you, other than the fact that there's an old principle in finance, always use somebody else's money first. Principally, that's what this is. So I'm of the point, if we want to do this, then maybe we just ought to go back to a regulated utility, make the policy decision. But I do have one question. Why would, you know, I'm just using a number. I think Kibbe spent $4 million per 3 megawatts. I think that's right. Somebody here will correct me if I'm wrong. Why, which is $1.3 million per megawatt. Why would I want to spend $6.2 million per megawatt when I can spend $1.3 million per megawatt? I think their capacity factor assumed either 35 or 40. Why is this a good investment today and even within the next 10 years for the main consumer?
So I have two responses to that. It is the only question really in my mind on the table. The first part of it is actually a very simple one, which is that you're very limited in onshore wind capacity, right? There are only so many ridges that you have, and only so many people are going to put up with it, as we've already heard. So you're going to top out, you're going to cap out in onshore wind sooner than you think, and you may never get to your goal. And that's true all over the East Coast, by the way. Massachusetts is almost impossible to get these things permitted. But the more serious question is why spend so much money? I scratch my head every day on it. And the only answer has two parts. One is that over time there will be a declining cost curve for the construction of the stuff, but we have to start someplace. It's just like semiconductor technology, where the learning curve, you come down as the volume goes up, and you can radically reduce the cost through technology enhancements. I believe that. The second part is that the main vision is integral to this. The main vision assumes that the price of fossil fuels is going to go up and up and up. And as it goes up, if we can take electric vehicles, we can take electric heating, all of whom are consuming these, at some point there's going to be a crossover of electricity produced by offshore wind and the cost of fossil fuels, where offshore wind will be cheaper source of energy than the current mechanism. So I think that is the vision. That's the 20, 30-year vision. And it's really hard for people anywhere to think about 20, 30 years from now. But that's what we are talking about. That is the answer. And there hasn't been testimony on that 20, 30-year crossover point.
You can think about and answer it later because we have a lot to know. But here is, we have designated three sites for the testing. And I think I asked this question earlier. What has changed in urgency before we even get the first blade turning in the test sites to now say we've got to sign recommend to sign a contract for whatever that total amount would be? I just need to understand it from the industry. And you can give us some thought and report back to the work session.
No, it's a real simple question. I am not concerned about the test sites. So I'm concerned about, as an entrepreneur and as a business person, developing a project in Maine to take advantage of your resources and to help make an impact on the economy and the ecology, society. So the deep water test sites are not really of interest to me at all. That's nothing to do with me. The rest of this bill is all about how do we encourage development of industry, the port development, transmission, all those other components. And Ms. Nagoski actually made that point in her closing comments a couple hours ago, that the bill doesn't just talk about deep water test sites. It talks about the development of an industry, which may include nearshore shallow water development in the short term in order to kickstart this industry in the Maine.
Just one more question. You're obviously pretty good at what you do because you work the numbers. What?
Thank you.
What was, and you know, I mean that as a sincere compliment. You know, there's a lot of us are always in danger of ruining a perfectly good opinion with the facts. And you know, I appreciate you coming in with the assumptions behind it. If you could think of what electricity at this price, what would be the equivalent price of oil?
Right. So that's the analysis that actually was done, I believe, Beth, if you could tell me. I think it was done by a subcommittee of the task force. I don't have that at my disposal, but they did look out, and that crossover point is essential to this decision.
Yes.
And if it turns out that you can never cross over, then one wonders. So
I do appreciate your work.
Right.
Representative Flaherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before I ask my question, I want to apologize to those in the room. I have to leave now for my real job. So I apologize for those speakers who haven't yet spoken, but I will read the testimony. My question is, though, and without the issue of debt support, and I'm looking at these numbers and the average monthly increase per household of $8 or $5, I'm assuming that's over the course of 15 to 20 years, depending on each one. That is not a ton of money for me to absorb in my household, but for a business or an industrial user to have these numbers are staggering. And I mean, you talk a lot about the economic benefit, but what are those numbers going to do? And is there a better way to get around this so that we're not burdening current ratepayers for the 20 to 30 year payout, which I'm also interested in, for obvious reasons, I'm asking, give me a little bit more clarification or ease my mind, because that's a lot of money.
Right. Let's pick one of those numbers. Let's say it's $5, the right hand column for a household. I believe that equated to 0.7 cents.
Yes.
For the overall rate base. So the industry or the commercial ratepayer would see a 0.7 cents increase per kilowatt hour. And this is on average over a 25-year project, right? For just this 250. The scary thing, and I'll be the first to admit this, and this is just for one 250-megawatt project.
Yeah.
So if you start to add more and more and more, if you don't increase the load in Maine, in other words, the demand for electricity, it's impossible. It will just skyrocket. So the only way to do this is to increase the load. There's two ways to do that. One is through the program that we've been discussing, electric heating, electric vehicles, et cetera. The other is to export it. And no one's talking about exporting today. So exporting it to Massachusetts, Connecticut, wherever, which will cost billions in transmission lines, which is a whole other conversation. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think you understand the numbers perfectly.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Seeing no other questions, I thank you very much.
Thank you.